Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist
Church. I hope you all had a wonderful week. My name is Patty Walker, and I'm this morning's representative from the church board. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. Please read the announcements listed in the order of service. Be sure to take the order of service home to read them. In addition, here are a few others. Today is the monthly designated collection sponsored by the Social Action Committee, which will be taken along with the regular weekly collection. This month's collection will go to Hebron House of Hospitality to support the Overflow Homeless Shelter for Men in Waukesha County. The need for donations is high, so please consider giving generously as you are able for this crucial community cause. Next Sunday, January 23rd, we will be showing the movie Departures following the service. There will be a soup and bread luncheon. I hope you can make it. Please consider bringing your friends and family too. There will be a discussion period afterwards for those who are interested to stay and talk about it. Please sign up to bring soup or bread in the social hall. Next Saturday, January 22nd, is our next monthly Habitat for Humanity Workday. Details are not yet known and will be announced through email. If you plan to participate, contact Tom Lobbin. Reverend Groth has brought information from the Interfaith Conference for those interested. Applications for the book study group and the Amazing Faiths Dinner Project and a statement from the Director of Interfaith on UU involvement in its programs. They are on the back radiator, back by the door. The materials for Menu for the Future class are in. See Jerry Flakis in the social hall to pick up your copy. I invite you to greet those sitting around you. If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. There is a variety of information available on the table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to any that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church. Or if you've been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to talk to you about that as well. If you are visiting with visiting us with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they go to religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the doors to my right and across the entryway if there is a need for child care during the service. Class will end at 11:15, at which time you can pick your children up from their classes. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, we would be pleased if you introduced them. If any guests have brought themselves, please feel comfortable introducing themselves. This would be a good time to do so. We'd really enjoy meeting you. Welcome. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall for refreshments and conversation following the service. The conversation corner is a good place to gather for discussion of the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode during the service. I hope you find this morning's service worthwhile. Our speaker today is Dr. Reverend Bobby Groth, a UU community minister who served the needs of victims of violence for over 20 years and now focuses on interfaith relations. She has been a SUAC representative to the Interfaith Conference of Greater Milwaukee since 1993 and is the secretary to the conference. Her book, The Incredible Story of Ephraim Newt, Scandal, Bloodshed, and Unitarians on the American Frontier, will be released by Skinner House Books on March 25, 2011. Our opening words today are from our own UU theologian, Forrest Church, and I would ask you to respond with the sung response in your order of service as Jerry lights the chalice. Religion speaks in many voices, some uplifting and some incendiary, with its time-honored capacity to foster peace and its growing potential as an instrument for violence. Religion is at once the most elevating and most dangerous power in today's world. I'd like to invite the children in particular forward now. Carrie Duma will read our story for all ages. Listen to the wind.
Okay, I got a microphone now. So I'm going to read this story, and Mona's going to, we have two copies. Mona's going to show you the pictures, and I'm going to read the book. And this is a really nice story. This is a children's version of a book that a lot of the adults in our congregation have read. So the pictures are kind of small, so come on in kind of close. This is called Listen to the Wind, and it's the story of Dr. Greg and three cups of tea. We are the children of Corfei. We live in a village in the mountains of Pakistan. Our families grow and gather the food we eat. Our mothers weave and sew the clothes we wear. We make up our games and we make our own toys. We read our books and we write with our pencils. We study in the school that we helped to build. Before our school was built, we had lessons outside. We wrote with sticks on the ground. That was before a stranger stumbled into our village. He was cold, hungry, and sick. We gave him tea and food and a bed near the fire. He told us his name was Greg Mortensen and that he was a nurse. He had come from the United States to climb our mountains, but he had lost his way. As he grew stronger, he helped to heal our sick. We called him Dr. Greg. Sometimes he sat outside and helped us with our lessons. He knew that our teacher came just 3 times a week, but that we still studied every day. When Dr. Greg was well enough to go home, he asked Haji Ali, our wisest man, to help him think of something special he could do for Corfei. Haji Ali answered Dr. Greg with a puzzle. "Listen to the wind," he said. Dr. Greg closed his eyes. From above the village on high, the ground where we sat at our lessons, the wind carried our voices down the path. Dr. Greg heard our voices. He felt the wind blow cold against his face, and he understood. Corfei needed a school. Dr. Greg promised to come back and help us build one. We watched him walk away until he disappeared into the folds of the mountains. 1 year later, we saw a man walking on the path far below our village. It was Dr. Greg. We all ran down to meet him. In Skardu, the nearest big town, he had collected the lumber, cement, and tools that we would need to build our school. But high above the Braldu River, we had only a single cable with a small box that could carry a person. There was no bridge from the next mountain. Without a bridge, no one could bring the heavy loads of building supplies to Corfei. So everyone worked together to build a bridge from our mountain all the way to the mountain on the other side of the river. Many months later, Dr. Greg and our fathers and friends crossed the strong new bridge carrying the supplies we needed to build our new school. They continued to climb until they reached the place where we had piled a mountain of stones cut from our own mountains. Haji Ali marked the exact spot where our school was to stand. Our mothers carried water to mix the cement. The men began to lay the stones for our classroom walls. With our small fingers, we wedged tiny slivers of stones into the cement to make the walls stronger. Our school grew each day up from the high, flat ground where we used to write with our sticks. Finally, the men attached the roof. They asked Dr. Greg to hammer in the last nail. Our school was finished. It was time to celebrate. Our imam, Sher Taki, our wise man, Haji Ali, our teacher, Hussein, Dr. Greg, who kept his promise, Julia, the librarian, who brought our books, the craftsmen, the workmen, the porters, the grown-ups of Corfei, the children of Corfei, and even the yaks and the joes and the goats and the sheep all marched together to our new school. Sher Taki blessed the building. We ran into our school with Hussein, who now would come to teach us every day. We are the children of Corfei. We live in a village in the mountains of Pakistan. We write in Urdu and English. We add and subtract. We read our books and explore our maps. We are learning in the school that we helped to build. We are the children of Corfei. Can you hear our voices? Listen to the wind. And that's the end. Thanks a lot.
And we invite the children to leave for the religious offertory? Okay. Okay, our hymn number 302, Children of the Human Race.
The offertory is the sacrament of the free church, and gifts are freely given and freely received. And in note in your order of service, the monthly designated collection today is for Hebron House of Hospitality, the overflow homeless shelter. Loose cash donations will go to the Hebron House. Checks can be made out to LCUUC with the amount of, with Hebron House noted on the memo line or check envelope.
Well, it's a good thing y'all know the program because How wonderful it is to see the size of your population of children. I speak in so many Unitarian churches where there's no children. And it's a shocking thing because 20 years ago we had tons and tons of kids. So I don't know. Here we go. Will you join me, please, in the responsive reading, Sharing Faith? That's printed in your order of service. There is pain all around. We can never ignore horrible headlines, but we can turn towards each other. We can talk about that which unites us, love, faith, hope, and charity. I feel my words have been inadequate. The faith another describes is different from my own, and I want to explore that difference. In my heart, I need to validate a place where those of another faith are afforded inherent worth and dignity, just as they are. We cannot forget that in many places, religion is often at the service of rulers who use it as an instrument to promote their legitimacy.
We have the privilege of free speech, must use it to recognize and resist the oppression of our own communities.
To share religiously, we must respect one another. To share religiously, we must ask ourselves the difficult questions, be honest with ourselves, and figure out what keeps us within our own religion. To share religiously, we must read about the religions of others. To share religiously, we must understand that testing the tenets of one's own faith in a challenging and safe environment is an exciting thing to do.
I want to understand what my faith and others' faith tick. In doing that, I will understand my own faith better, and it will become stronger.
To share religiously, we must live by the tenet of honesty. There is pain all around. We can talk about that which unites us, love, faith, hope, and charity. I feel my own words have been inadequate. The faith another describes is different from my own, and I want to explore that difference.
Now is the time in our faith community for us to share our joy and concerns with each other. Please be brief. Hold up your hand if you have a joy or concern to share. Give your name and your joy or concern. I'll light our first candle in commemoration of those whose lives have been lost in conflicts, and may we find a better way to resolve our problems.
Hi, I'm Mark Brewer, and two joys. My son is got engaged over Christmas, and so there's going to be an August wedding to Lisa, and my daughter has made a big decision to leave her good job and go get an MBA at Harvard. So she's excited about that. I'm excited for her, so couple good things happened with my kids. So,
hi, I'm John. Would you please light a candle of joy? My mother is recovering from her broken hip. She's back home again, doing well, feeling pretty upbeat. So that is really a joy for me.
Hi, I'm Mary. I just have a candle of concern and sorrow. We've gone up to the Upper Peninsula to ski for many, many years, and the lodge burned to the ground this last week. And it just feels like part of my childhood burned down.
Jerry, would you please light, this is Carlin Wagner, a candle of concern for a family whose daughter was assaulted at Kettle Moraine Middle School and her head beaten to the point of unconsciousness and visual effects. Just don't know how to support that family, but I please light a candle of concern.
Hi, my name's Lynn. Just a candle of joy for all the children from this congregation that go off and do wonderful service work. Jenna just came home from Belize. They did a lot of service projects down there. And then my daughter Mae was home for a couple weeks over Christmas after spending 3 months in Guatemala at Safe Passage, a school for the garbage dump kids. And she came to the Half the Sky book group here at church and shared that experience and is safe and sound back there again. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Bev. I would like to share a joy. My younger son is finishing up about a 10-day stint in El Salvador with a group called Engineers Without Borders. And they are working on water purification and sewage disposal, working hard in the hot sun. And I'm just really proud of him. Not only is he volunteering, but he paid to get there. So I'm hoping he'll come with me to church one of these days. He lives in Madison, but he's a Unitarian at heart.
And a last candle for the joys and concerns kept in our hearts.
As you contemplate the joys and concerns that have gone unspoken, our meditation is adapted from the World Council of Churches, Love All People. An image of the divine lies in the hearts of all people. We live among peoples whose ways are different from ours, whose faiths are foreign to us, whose tongues are unintelligible to us. May we be helped to remember that love is big enough for all people, that religion is an attempt to respond to that great love, that the yearnings of other hearts are much like our own and transcend our differences. May we be helped to recognize the divine in the words of truth, the things of beauty, the actions of love about us. May we seek wisdom through the prophetic voice, a stranger to no one land more than another, and to every land no less than another. Will you join me in our centering hymn, number 402, From You I Receive? Please stand as you are willing and able. Albert Camus said, "Great ideas come into the world as gently as doves." Perhaps then, if I listened attentively, I shall hear amid the uproar of empires and nations a faint flutter of wings, a gentle stirring of life and hope. What difference does it make that we are here? I'd like to share a story about my darling cousin Bess, who passed away this past spring at the extraordinary age of 92. As a matter of fact, I'm not even related to cousin Bess. She emigrated to the U.S. during the Depression and was taken in by my mother's family. But she is family. Loved as she was, missed deeply since she's gone. Bess had been an Anglican in Canada, and so an Episcopalian in the USA. She was very devout, so enthusiastic about her head position on the altar guild that she earned the nickname the Bishop from her church, her small town, and her priest, who was lost without her direction every Sunday. Bess was outspoken. Despite being a staunch Republican, she marched with us, or I should say toddled behind a wheelchair with us, against the war in Iraq at a 4th of July parade just a few years before her death. She was one of the women in my family who profoundly influenced me growing up. Now, one day when I was quite young, we were crouched in the backyard weeding her strawberries together. "Well," she snorted, "what do you think about your parents taking you to that Unitarian church?" "I don't know, Aunt Bess," I said. At the time, I was taught to call her Aunt Bess out of respect for our age differences. "What should I think?" I asked her. "Well," she said, "they're no better than those Jews." "I didn't know there was anything wrong with the Jews," I said, and she dropped the issue right there. And that was my first lesson that being a UU made a difference in my attitude towards interfaith relations. Growing up in a family that had Unitarian and Universalist roots going back several hundred years, one that became a UU family along with the whole denomination in 1962, means I had the amazing privilege of being introduced to other religions in a very different way than most of my peers, including many UUs I have encountered during my adult life and ministry. They came to us in order to leave a damaging or what they felt was an inadequate religious faith behind. Our UU religious education as children did not teach us to be suspicious of other faiths. I was taken to their places of worship regularly by my parents and my religious education program. We felt welcome and unthreatened there. Not being in recovery from another faith means that those who were UU children usually didn't have the impulse to reject certain beliefs, practices, or religions out of hand because they represented something they were trying to leave behind, unless they were specifically taught that by their parents. Neither our childhood UU's secularized versions of another faith finding themselves more comfortable in the humanism of a UU congregation, but still carrying a sword against the conflicts of a previous faith. We were taught to stand our ground before anyone who would try to demean our religion, but not to insist that it was a superior. As a result, I don't really feel the need to cross God or Jesus out of the hymnal. As a somewhat militant agnostic, I really don't feel uncomfortable in public prayer, even when someone prays to God or in Jesus' name for my sake. I can accept Holy Communion and other rites not my own when they are offered to me as part of the hospitality of a faith group where I am a guest, regardless of whether I subscribe to the official dogma behind those rites. Now, that is not to say that I couldn't go head to head with someone who tries to convert me, and I wouldn't hold forth for hours about why that faith is not my faith, or preach about the clay feet of any religious authority. But generally, I was taught to accept, respect, and value other religions just as they are. Now I appreciate this as one of the profound gifts Unitarian Universalism has given me as an individual and one of the greatest assets it has given my community ministry. I can meet people spiritually and religiously where they are without the compulsion to convert or shame them. Religious understanding goes far deeper than mentioning other religions and their scriptures in our Sunday school and worship services. It means acceptance, not arrogance, rubbing shoulders, not isolationism, because those positive kinds of actions are necessary for peace. Now, I'm very fortunate to be living in the Milwaukee area, as there is an active interfaith organization here, the Interfaith Conference of Greater Milwaukee. The Interfaith Conference is a nonprofit organization consisting of regional leaders and supporters of 13 member faiths and denominations. It focuses on building interfaith relationships, bringing interfaith education to increase public understanding, and providing a venue for faiths to work together on social justice issues, especially those that improve the quality of life for those in poverty. It also brings together non-member faiths to join in its many programs and activities, and in short, strives to be a unified voice of moral conscience. Now, I hope the members of the interfaith and its supporters are listed in your order of service. Did that make it in there? Yeah. And I really wanted you to see that Interfaith Conference is truly interfaith. It is not simply ecumenical Christian. The Interfaith Conference was originally formed in 1970 out of two organizations that addressed racial equality in housing, public education, and employment during the social upheavals of the 1960s. We UUs were with them almost from the very beginning. We were just two or three congregations then. But the Interfaith Conference encouraged us to form SUIC, the Southeastern Wisconsin Unitarian Universalist Congregations, so that we could stand together equally with denominations many times our size. We all get three representatives apiece. That gives us, as UUs, enormous potential. Now, the founders of Interfaith marched with Father James Groppi in the early 60s in protest of massive racial inequality and segregation. In the 70s, task groups were formed around desegregation of public schools, housing, the environmental crisis, racial equality, training clergy about poverty, and media relations. The Interfaith Conference created an alternative service program to employ conscientious objectors to the war in Vietnam. It instituted the Interfaith Program for Older Adults, which is now independent of the conference and provides for the major needs of our older citizens. The conference also began an ethnic heritage project to provide a guide to ethnic resources in the Milwaukee area. That was just the 1970s. In the 1980s, the conference organized the first Greater Milwaukee Crop Walk with Church World Service. This anti-hunger program continues to grow and has spread to outlying suburbs and counties. The Religion and Labor Committee formed, sponsoring annual conferences and national speakers in the interest of fair wages and labor practices. The Interfaith Fund for Jobs provided loans to small businesses to create jobs, and the Peace and International Issues Committee first began voicing opposition to U.S. policy regarding Nicaragua, El Salvador, and South Africa. The Congregation Action Network formed and continues to this day to help congregations advocate for responsible and just public policy on issues important to low-income families. Also during the 80s, the Interfaith Conference helped to create MICA, the Milwaukee Inner City Congregations Allied for Hope, by letting organizers and donors use the conference's tax-exempt status. Now, during the 1990s, the conference issued an interfaith plea for justice in response to the Desert Storm Iraq invasion and launched Beyond Racism, which creates multicultural dialogues and offers extensive anti-racism training programs, including the Common Ground Anti-Racism Conference held with UW-Milwaukee for many years. In 1994, the Beyond Racism Children's Program resulted in the production of the Alike and Different curriculum, a big seller nationally to UU congregations. It has reached its third edition and teaches children to understand and value differences through stories, songs, games, and fun activities. In 1995, the conference welcomed Archbishop Desmond Tutu as its speaker at its 25th anniversary celebration. And in that year, the Milwaukee Association for Interfaith Relations, or MAIR, came under the umbrella of the Interfaith Conference as one of its programs, bringing with it more groups of Buddhists, Muslims, Sikhs, Jains, and Baha'i, who joined the Catholics, many Protestants, Jews, Quakers, and Unitarians already in the conference. In the 90s, the Interfaith Conference and others had begun to coordinate the emergency overflow shelter for women and children when welfare reform deprived them of their homes. Through the planning efforts of the Interfaith Conference and its partners, 7 years later, this program spun off and moved into a newly renovated cathedral center in downtown Milwaukee, where it continues to provide not just a place to sleep, but homeless recovery services for women and children. In 2001, the Interfaith Conference and MAIR sponsored a packed downtown Milwaukee Interfaith Prayer Service for Peace in response to the attacks of September 11th. In 2007, after a multi-year cooperative effort, the Interfaith Conference and other groups succeeded in having Milwaukee create a housing trust fund, which built support for affordable housing into the municipal tax structure. And I understand this has now been taken up here in Waukesha County. Also in 2007, after 30 years of concern with environmental issues, the conference launched the Faith and Ecology Project Network with Tomorrow's Present and the Urban Ecology Center, eventually forming the current Interfaith Earth Network, or IEN. The Interfaith Conference has been a strong vehicle for the entire community to be active in issues and concerns that all UUs share. It gives us a network and means to put numbers of people behind issues of social justice that UU and other congregations, small as they are not able to do alone. The past few years demonstrated the need for even more deep and educational dialogue in order to help push back against the alarming tide of interfaith hatred being promoted by reactionary media. After experiencing a great deal of distress over divisiveness between some of its members in 2009, in 2010, its 40th anniversary year, Interfaith Conference launched two new programs to get people from every faith and no faith at all to in face-to-face contact with each other for dialogue and interfaith understanding. One of these programs is the new Interfaith Book Discussion Group, which in fall 2010 read and discussed The Faith Club, a book written by a Jewish, Christian, and a Muslim woman about how they came to a deep understanding of each other's faiths through dialogue post 9/11. As one of the conveners of this book group, it came home to me again just how important it is for UUs to be present for interfaith dialogue. As I heard words about the inherent worth and dignity of all people being mouthed by everyone. The second program, which is being launched this January and February, involves bringing the Amazing Faiths Dinners Project to Milwaukee. In this program, 8 to 12 people of different religions or no religion at all sit down together at a simple meal and with the guidance of a trained moderator, learn to listen deeply to each other's faith journey without criticism, judgment, or debate, and also to have a place to articulate their own spiritual journey. Information forms for both of these groups, if you're interested, are on the back radiator there. Now, our own UU theologian, Forrest Church, from whose books many of us draw much courage and inspiration, wrote at length in his work, The Cathedral of the World, about our acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth. He said, "We are bound by the shared recognition that when one person suffers, all suffer. When we violate one life, all lives are violated. When we pollute the earth, all living things are stained. When one nation threatens the security of another, it too becomes less secure. When we place the planet in mortal danger, we hazard the future of our own children as well as the children of our enemies." Church points out that we all have prejudices, and if thoughtful people don't work hard at these prejudices, bigots, those who celebrate prejudice, will only be vested with more power. Church offers the idea that the way to counter fear with faith is to start with our own prejudices, because we can do something about those. He says, "We did nothing to deserve being born. We did nothing to earn life's privileges of joy and pain. And on the day we die, we still know almost nothing about what life was all about. So what do? Do we name our stars and shake our heads in humility and wonder? No. We sit on a single grain of sand on this vast cosmic beach and argue over who has the goods on God, the atheist or the atheist. We duel, sometimes to the death, over which religious teacher has the best insider information." Now, people learn their religion before they are old enough to judge, or they are converted, often under stressful or unendurable times in their lives, where the conversion is seen as both liberating and enlivening, snatching them back from a pit of despair. Up against that origin, challenges to personal beliefs elicit a visceral and emotional response that is exacerbated by a fear that should the challenges present a worldview capable of toppling our own, that the very ground of the cosmos will shift under us. Humans fight against those kinds of ground-shifting changes, often with their own lives. Now, all of the sectarian conflicts worldwide ask us to consider what the role of the onlooker is when two religions have conflict. In a fractured community, it is either to take sides and vehemently support the destruction of one side by the other, or to stay out of the way, guiltily trying to ignore the atrocities while waiting for a victor to emerge and then rewriting history to grant them just cause. In a diverse yet just and connected community, the role of the onlooker would be different. And this is where it matters that we UUs are here as people whose covenant with the world is to respect the inherent worth and dignity of all humans, heed the words of prophetic women and men, and draw inspiration from the many facets of religion. It matters that we could take the lead for developing synergy and conversion, not in the sense of converting other religions to ours, but in the sense of converting all of us to peace. Doing the excruciating work of peacemaking acknowledges the hurts of the past, but tries to bring both sides to make a disciplined decision to leave retaliation behind in support of opening a future of life and peace for all the children involved. This requires a bringing together of the combatants in real hospitality, real talk, real honesty, to delve deeper beyond the restrictions of jingoistic religious or political loyalty. Gustav Niebuhr, in his book Beyond Tolerance, the book being studied by our interfaith book group this spring, points out the critical challenge of our age. He says, "We live in an era not simply of religious violence, but one in which bitter divisions are painfully evident and often gratuitously cultivated. That's especially true in national politics, in which rhetoric is often suffused with partisan rage. Public debate seems laced with poison. In Congress, and even more so on television and the internet, such rough trade in raw insult denies the possibility that we might share anything like a common life. In such circumstances, it is remarkable that some people would try to use religion, or rather different religions, to create not explosive divisions, but rather a sense of community. But Niebuhr's research explores just that. The great outpouring of help during the 9/11/2001 tragedy. He says another force was at work amid the horror, a constructive force, alive at the grassroots, defined by neighborliness and an active commitment to the preservation of peace and the safety and rights of vulnerable people. Some people had taken America's emerging religious diversity and sought to create a community of it. This was the community that rushed to the rescue, not only of those in the World Trade Center, but of mosques and Muslims, and Sikhs and Sikh temples guilty by association simply because they were seen wearing turbans. These groups became targets of violence as a result of the perpetrators of the attack identifying themselves as Muslim, and the reactionary media running wild with that. The neighborly community, by far the dominant response to the tragedy, is the piece that has been intentionally left out of the ensuing conversation of fear dominated by Fox Media and its imitators ever since. It is the neighborly community that has chosen to not only question, but to work against the far-right propaganda that would have all of us turn upon our Muslim neighbors and brand them terrorists. This is but one example of the vision of community that makes UU involvement in interfaith relations not only right, but an imperative for us. But that imperative is not simply a passive call for tolerance. As Niebuhr declares, tolerance can be a shallow foundation on which to construct a community. Toleration serves as a basis for a ceasefire, but it does not offer a vision of what might follow. Dialogue is an activity that represents a state of relations going well beyond tolerance. To put it simply, you can coexist with people without ever having to speak meaningfully with them. What holds society together is not just people who will tolerate others, but people who will actually go beyond that to provide the glue that nourishes social relationships. You cannot truly be concerned about human rights unless you believe that each individual has an inherent worth and dignity. And to assume that is to do more than simply tolerate people. It is to extend to them a recognition of their uniqueness. Now, I hear the very first one of our principles and purposes talking here. And in this, I hear a call for UUs to enter boldly into the cause of interfaith relations. The truth is, we have not, really. Our denomination statistics tell us that less than 1 in 10 UU congregations have engaged in any sort of interfaith activity. So often, what anyone takes from their own religion is to feel superior about it, and to believe that those who don't share it are misguided, unintelligent, ignorant, just plain stupid, or going to hell. Now, we must admit that we UUs can have our own enlightened version of that dynamic. We have often been talking the superficial talk of tolerance, but we have not largely been walking the walk of deeper interfaith understanding. We are not to wait, passively mouthing tolerance until people find their way to us because they have traded their religion for ours. We are enjoined to do a better job of getting ourselves out of our sometimes religiously arrogant or economically determined isolation from the Jews, Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists, and above all, Christians and others around us. Even if we have to travel to accept their hospitality and learn from them in their own places of worship, it is incumbent upon us to do so in order to live out the principles of our own faith. The interdependent web of all existence is not just about trees and flowers. It's also about our hospitable and deep listening and dialogue with people who are not religiously like us. We learned from the Faith Club book that when we feel bruised by the crises of our differences, we can be healed by the generosity and compassion of our similarities. But we have to take the risk of reaching inward together for those similarities and cultivating them. Now, I've noticed that despite the amazingly progressive philosophical underpinnings of our Yui religion, often, even in our own churches, we know very little about the spirituality of our own pew neighbors. We have to ask ourselves, is our congregation a place whose tolerance rituals actually isolate us from others? A place where we never really talk about what we believe for fear of offending others or being criticized ourselves? Or is it a faith club, like the one described in the book, where superiority and fear are set aside and we listen deeply to each other's spiritual center without barging in to correct or challenge, either outwardly by interrupting and arguing, or inwardly when we unconsciously stop listening to another because we immediately compare their beliefs to our own and dismiss them as wanting? If we have not even shared individual spirituality between the pews in our congregation, it is fair for us to ask of ourselves, have we given a fair shake to other religions at all? Have we made it make a difference that we, with our theoretically inclusive principles and purposes, are actually here, living out inclusivity and dialogue and understanding? And now, of course, I want to hear from you. What has been your experience in this regard? What are your questions? What do you wonder about? What are your fears?
Hi, my name is Betsy. Could you comment on how you think congregation-based community organizing might help bring faith groups together?
Probably the same way it made interfaith in the 1960s. It was all congregation-based community organizing, looking at the local problems, saying enough is enough. You know, we can't stand in our pulpits on Sunday and preach with authenticity until we band together to do something about the profound segregation and injustice in this area. Yeah. And that's what's so wonderful. If, you know, there's a lot of talk now about localizing things, and that's a wonderful way to localize it.
Hi, my name is Fran, and I just want to comment that I really like your choice of words such as respect. I know we often use the word tolerance, but, you know, if you turn that around and you say, someone's going to tolerate me, no one really wants to be tolerated. And so I think that I really like the use of words like respect, understanding. But tolerance and toleration really has kind of a negative side implication, I think, if you look at it.
Yeah, that's Thank great. You. And Niebuhr's book is so wonderful in that, because he's saying toleration is not engagement, and we won't have peace until we have engagement.
My name's Yvonne, and I've been going down memory lane a lot lately. So when we started this church, about, was it 15, 14 years ago, we did make a point of inviting our religious neighbors. We had someone from the Baha'i faith and Mormon and Presbyterian come to mind, and had them actually conduct a service for us and an attempt to understand each other better. And I think it was a good thing to do. Personally, it always felt like we're cracking the door open a little bit, but we really didn't have a dialogue, and it was always, oh, but they're not really telling us, you know, the part we would object to kind of thing. So it was a very surface thing, but it was an attempt to reach out to our neighbors anyway. So that's.
Did you visit them too?
No, we just invited them for as speakers. Or the churches did.
Some did, yeah. And individually, that's good. I was a kid that, you know, would sneak out of Sunday school. For a while, we attended a Methodist church in our town because it was close, and there were a lot of us on Sunday morning, and, you know, our parents could send us walking up the street to Sunday school, and I used to sneak out and go across the street to the African Methodist Episcopal Church because their music was better, and they moved, and I loved it. You know, and I'm sure they were all looking at me going, what is that crazy little white girl doing here? But it was something that I had been made to feel comfortable doing. And it's really important to go on in other people's home.
Actually, there was recently an adult RE program where we did study different religions and as a group went to other churches and other places of worship and had that experience.
Mm-hmm. What's nice is if you do contact the Interfaith Conference of Greater Milwaukee and get on the mailing list whenever there are public events in the Jewish community, the Muslim community, you know, in every of community, you'll get an invitation. And, you know, then that makes the possibility for a church group going together, making it a church thing.
Hi, I'm Tom. And this is probably a more personal sharing.
Mm-hmm.
My whole life, I've had the intentions of interfaith, interrace, inter-economic class dialogue, but it's really only the past couple of years that I've come to the realization that for me and maybe for other people that an important ingredient to dialogue is showing up, is physically being there. You have to sit and look at people directly. And so I've become a huge advocate of FaceTime over Facebook.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know, I was in a conversation with somebody the other day, and I was telling them, well, you know, that person walked into the meeting, and, you know, I don't know, I really didn't like them. I don't know why. And so the next five meetings, I'm going to sit next to them. And we're going to talk and we're going to get to know each other because that's how I deal with that feeling of discomfort. When you have discomfort, go sit by the person. If you think you don't like them, well, you may not like certain aspects of them, but once you form that personal relationship, I know who you are. I know, you know, all the naughty little things you did when you were a kid, you know, and that makes it hard to dislike somebody completely once you have that personal relationship.
Thank you for your sermon. And we had a sermon last week with our minister, Jane Espenson, mm-hmm. and about words and the power of words. So I'm curious, I've been thinking about words, you know, and religious words. And the word church, you know, we are Lake Country UU Church, and I know not all Unitarian churches are churches, but societies and things.
Mm-hmm.
I personally like the word church, and I like the word sanctuary and communion, and to me they're, you know, you can see them in a fresh way, you know, without all the baggage that we bring sometimes from our history. Just curious, what do you think about the word church for Unitarian Universalists, if you don't mind?
If you want it, have it. You know, it's when I attend interfaith events, I usually collar up, you know, and I'm like, oh, I hope no Unitarians see me here. but the fact is, and one of my compatriots said, oh, God, how can you be comfortable doing that? I said, because, you know, I am bound and determined to steal this symbol back from the baggage. And I think we make decisions about that in terms of language. Do we use church, and does that mean we've been chased out by another tradition, or do we use church because we're reclaiming it And we're saying this is our church, and the history behind the entire community being blended together in the church. That's how, and it's a pre-Christian word, you know. But that is why I want people to see me in a Roman collar and hear this raving neo-feminist, you know, progressive rant coming out of my mouth. And to understand that this is religion too. You know, this is how we think too. So I say reclaim it. You know, reclaim it, have the full discussion of why some people are uncomfortable with it, what it means to them, look up the history. I mean, that's the joy of intelligence, right? That we get to look at things and look at evidence and really, really play with it and own it ourselves.
I like your idea of that, in effect, humbleness is a virtue, that we should not be sanctimonious. But what sort of dialogue would you have with Pat Robertson?
I would love to get Pat Robertson in a dark room with me. How would I do it personally? I would begin to talk to Pat probably about his childhood, about his belief system. The way I had neighbors that I was very close friends with who are followers of Pat Robertson and who were born agains and, you know, very, very conservative. And they would say things to me like, gosh, you're so nice. I just can't believe you're going to hell. You know, and things like, well, what will you do someday when you wake up and half the people are gone? And I was like, I'm getting a better car, you know, because when you have that personal neighbor, and neighborly is a wonderful word for it. You know, I don't think I would go there and assault Pat Robertson about his public persona, although that probably figures large in my fantasy life. But in actuality, you know, I would talk to him as a neighbor and begin to talk and talk and talk and talk and find out what makes this man tick, because I have to respect him first if he's going to hear me. If there's any chance, and he is a person I would like to change, you know, I would, because I think destruction is done with his words. And it would be nice to talk to him and be friends with him and go from there. But that's the conversation I would have, the neighborly conversation. And I think a lot of us have forgotten how to do that because we lead such isolated lives. You know, so we're proscribed by the boundaries of our house and very separated from where we work or from who we, our friends are somewhere else. They're often not in our neighborhoods anymore. But that's the direction I would go in. Does that make sense?
Hi, I'm Eric. I'm over here. I think one of the incidents of arrogance that you use are susceptible to is the idea that we are the only ones with open minds.
Yeah.
I sort of had an eye-opening experience with this when I joined the Hope Center board in Waukesha. At the time I joined, it was the Cooperating Congregations of Waukesha County. It was started as a Christian, it was Christian ministers that started it, and it was a group of Christian congregations that ran it, and so it had that Christian identity. There was a discussion, not initiated by me, to broaden the organization, let loose of that Christian identity, mm-hmm. and make it the Hope Center, which is welcoming to all religions. And I, frankly, had serious doubts about it. I was worried about losing the base of the organization and losing the funding. And it was the Christian members that really wanted to open that door It was eye-opening to me to see how open-minded other, in this case, Christian people can be, and it's not just we Unitarians that are.
Yeah, that's definitely been my experience throughout seminary. I've always had a special place in my heart for men and women in Catholic religious orders. And sort of on the outside, you think, oh, these are the most conservative and the most unbending, and actually I find them very progressive. And but how would I know that unless they had become my friends? You know, how would I know that? So.
Hi, I'm Barbara. One of the hardest things I have to deal with being a Unitarian is not religious diversity, it's the lack of racial diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like Milwaukee, Waukesha, they're very divided racially to begin with, and I guess for me, there's a large concern about how can that ever be healed. And I just wonder if there's any kind of thing going on with the interfaith to really address that.
Sure.
Because it's just, I mean, I work in Milwaukee with the inner city kids, and it's just such a strong barrier.
That's right. Milwaukee is probably, I think we're trading off as the most segregated city in America. That was the Beyond Racism Project at Milwaukee. We actually did the first research in the entire nation through the Beyond Racism Project to look at racial disparity. What is the reality of the difference between how white Americans live and people of color live? And so we looked at a gamut and published our results, which of course got national attention. Not very popular because it didn't tell us things we wanted to hear. Pulled together research, did lots of stuff, research out in the community. We now can say by citing that report, which is available to you if you call the office, you can get a copy of it. But it talks about what is the disparity in very real terms in a way that had not been documented any other way than anecdotally before. So now we've got the research, and of course that went into the Beyond Racism Project where that project gets groups of people of different races together to have just this kind of dialogue together to bridge that. It also gets congregations together to mix, to become friends, to realize that segregation is a very real geographical thing in Milwaukee as in other places. And if segregation is kind of an arbitrary geographical reality, then we need to do formal things to cross those barriers. And those include getting to know people, doing things together, okay, learning how to talk face-to-face. I think this is one of my favorite things in the UU denomination because, the topic that my book looks at is the abolitionist cause in Unitarianism and Universalism. And many of us think, you know, right from the beginning we were carrying the flag against slavery. Well, we weren't. Our rich people were right up there firing their ministers for preaching against slavery because this upset their economic control. And I think that despite that, as a denomination, we came to terms with that. And we were a huge part of abolitionism, and it is largely because of us and several other key religious players that slavery was overturned. First, African American and other people of color got the vote, first males, then females. I think it is a positive thing as Unitarians to understand what sector of society we come from. We are white, we are educated, we are very privileged. And so we are the people who should be opening up the cracks in society. People don't have to come to us. People of color don't have to come here for us to do what we need to do. Okay? Over time, that may happen because our denomination will change as we use our privilege to bring about social justice. And that's sort of, these are kind of radical words for our denomination, because our big thrust from Boston has been, you know, we all have to get integrated, otherwise we don't count. I don't believe that. If I believed that, I wouldn't have done the work I've done all these years, where I'm the only white face in the room. You know, and I think that to know and to understand our position of privilege is what we need to do. Our goal is not simple racial integration. Our goal is social justice and equality on a justice level. And when we work for that, some of the other things will change. Does that make sense? And I know this is not a popular view in this denomination right now. So. Okay. Okay. Sounds good.
Ready to go.
Okay. That's great. Okay. Forrest Church, before his tragic death in 2009, definitely called us UUs to get out there. He said, if our religion doesn't inspire in us a humble affection for one another and a profound sense of awe at the wonder of being, one of two things has happened. It has failed us, or we have failed it. This service is ended. Your service to your faith is just begun. Go in peace to serve the inherent worth and dignity of others.
One per person.
That's right. Okay, so I should go to the